Welcome to this week's episode of The Fitness Solution. And today I've got a wonderful interview for you all with someone called Sophie Medlin. And Sophie is a dietitian. She works out of London for a company called City Dietitians. And I decided to get her on the phone this week because there's been quite a lot of uproar and quite a lot of interest in a particular brand called Skinny Jab. The wonderful wonderful people like Gemma Collins and Kerry Katona have decided to promote a pen, basically, or a jab that makes you skinny. And there's been a lot of chit-chat about it, so I thought I would go to someone with all of the knowledge, all of the understanding, and really cut to the nub of what it is, how it works, and whether it's a good idea or not. Added to that, we get into... It's a really interesting conversation because it's not a let's slam Gemma Collins as much as it very much could have been, and it's not a let's slam Kerry Katona very much as it could have been. But really what we get into is the ethics of these kinds of people promoting things that they're completely and utterly out of their depth with and they're not qualified to do. And we end up talking about ethics, we end up talking about responsibility online for people in the health space, and all of these really important topics that need a lot more space, a lot more conversation, and a lot more understanding from the people who peddle stuff like this, but as well as from the observer, from the person being influenced by said, in inverted commas, influencers, and whether you really should trust what it is you're seeing online a lot of the time. And Sophie's got some really interesting stories about that. It's a really great episode. Thank you, Sophie, for coming on. It means a hell of a lot to me. And I just really hope you're going to enjoy this episode as much as I enjoyed recording it. And if you do enjoy it, then please remember to leave the podcast a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, because that really helps spread the podcast to as many ears as possible, which is always the aim here. So that's it from me. Let's hand it over to myself and Sophie. Welcome to The Fitness Solution. On the other end of the line, on the other end of Skype, actually, today is, I've got the wonderful nutritionist, Sophie Medlin. Now, I first saw Sophie talk on an online seminar, which is the first fitness seminar I'd ever attended, actually, by the Fitness Unfiltered crew, which is another great podcast that I recommend you go and listen to. And Sophie spoke with such clarity, interest, intelligence, and she was just an absolute delight. So I wanted to get her on today because over the last couple of weeks, there's been a huge push by a company called Skinny Jab and a couple of interesting Z-list celebrities who are trying to promote this weight loss injection stuff. So I thought, as always, let's cut through all the crap and let's get some real knowledge, some real intelligence, and some real facts about what this is and whether it's good for people to take in terms of weight loss and things like that. I have my own views. I know they slightly align with Sophie's on it because I've seen all of her wonderful posts on Instagram. But yeah, Sophie, say hey.
Hi, thanks very much for having me on.
Our absolute pleasure. Thank you for coming on. It means a hell of a lot to me to have you here. So before we get into the Gemma Collins, Kerry Katona crap of life, how about we just find out a bit more about you? You're a dietitian based in Farringdon in London.
That's right. Yeah. So I'm a dietitian. I've been a dietitian for a long time before nutrition became trendy. So I've been dietitian for about 13 years now. Started training 3 years before that. So I've been a while in the nutritional sciences space. And funnily enough, when I started training, everyone said, oh, nutrition is going to get really big in a minute. People are going to get really interested in it. And in my naive head, I thought that meant that the NHS was going to get really well funded for dietitians and it would be brilliant. And we'd prevent diabetes and we'd sort of deal with all these gut issues and that everything would be brilliant within the NHS. And of course, actually what happened was the public interest in nutrition exploded. But the profile, you know, we as an NHS kind of provider, as dietitians, we weren't there to meet that need. And so you'll remember, and everyone else will, that the people who led the kind of nutrition movement on social media were not and still aren't qualified people in the space.
Yeah.
And of course, that then leads to all of these issues like skinny jabs being promoted by celebrities, skinny teas that give people that make contraception fail and cause unwanted pregnancies and all kinds of awful things going on. Kim Kardashian is one of the biggest voices in nutrition, selling appetite suppressant lollipops and all kinds of different shakes. And, you know, it's a mess. It's a big mess. So just to go back to my career, I spent about 7 or 8 years in the NHS looking after the sickest people in the hospital. So my specialisation is looking after people who've had bowel surgery.
Oh, wow.
So every little bit of your gut does a slightly different job in terms of absorption of nutrients. And so there are obviously consequences when we take bits of people's guts out. So I still work very much and heavily in that area now with my patients. So that's my kind of bulk patient group, and also public with companies and with groups who are working, looking after those kinds of patients, patients with things like inflammatory bowel disease, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, but also things like IBS. Excuse me. So that's kind of my clinical work. I then lectured and researched in nutrition and dietetics for 5 years at two different institutions, most recently at King's College in London, which was a fantastic experience. And I love actively teaching, but so much of my job was admin, which I hate.
You're not the only one.
Yeah, I know. So I exited that and I kind of built up the business alongside my academic role for about 6 months. And now I run my business full time, which is called City Dietitians. And what we've done is collate real expert dietitians. So nutrition is a really, really broad field. And it's really important to remember that, you know, you wouldn't see a gynecologist for a respiratory problem. So you don't want to see a diabetes dietitian if you've got a gastrointestinal problem. So what we do is provide experts from each of those kind of fields of nutrition who have got academic expertise as well as clinical expertise, and make sure that our patients and people who come to us can have the right dietitian for the job, rather than just having any old dietitian who might know a little bit about their condition, but not everything about their condition. So we do evidence-based nutrition for individuals, for companies. So I work with startups in product development and things like that, and also for the media. So I do a fair amount of TV and radio work and lots of written work these days as well.
Yeah, you write for Forbes, don't you?
I do, yeah.
Fantastic. How's that? Is that fun? Do you like writing? Do you like that kind of content?
I love writing. I feel very lucky because, you know, in previous parts of my life, my writing has had to be so academically focused and heavily referenced and had to be in a very professional style. Whereas now I have this sort of freedom to write in a way that's my own voice and what I want to say. And I can say these cheeky things that are okay and I can get away with them because it's me. I'm not working for an organization, but my own organization.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, it's good. I'm very lucky.
I managed to get my degree. So I have a degree in classical acting from the Drama Centre London, which is just down the road in Farringdon, actually, or it was when I was there. And I got my entire degree without ever having to write a single word. Like I didn't, it was all vocational. It was all what you do in class all day, every day and stuff. And I didn't have to write a single word. And now when I come to writing articles on my website and stuff, it's great because I can just write with complete freedom. I'm not restricted. And I see like my fiance writing essays and stuff and I can't read them because they've got all these numbers all over them. They're all cited properly. And I'm like, how do you do that? What is that? It's having that kind of flexible creative freedom, especially if you run your own business, because you've probably got a creative mind anyway. It's really important, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think those two sort of creativity and it is part of entrepreneurialism. You know, it's that ability to look and see a problem and find solutions and think about what you want to bring to it and what you can add to the space and what your, you know, what your voice is and where you want to be. And I think, you know, I'm very lucky with my writing that it's well received and people, and it takes a while though, I have to say. It took me a while to find my style and my voice, and I think for a long time I was trying to sort of emulate other people or trying to keep it really formal or just getting it wrong. And I started just blogging about things that I was interested in. And I kind of found this, way of writing that felt natural to me and that felt like maybe you were having a chat with me, which I think kind of people generally quite like. So that's good.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So to summarize, I couldn't have found anyone more qualified to talk about this topic today, basically, is what we're saying here. Look, we might as well just get into it because I'm sure that's what everyone wants to hear about and learn about and stuff. So skinny jab. It's a drug that is administered by the NHS, although skinny jab isn't. The drug's liraglutide, is that how you say it?
Liraglutide.
And it's designed to help people lose weight who can't lose weight, basically.
Yeah, so liraglutide was first used in patients who have diabetes, and it's used to help to improve insulin sensitivity and improve the picture of where people have type 2 diabetes in particular. It has also been used in clinical, and it is effective for that purpose. I should be clear that it is effective for that purpose. It then went on to be trialed in helping people to lose weight without diabetes, but without diabetes in this context. The really important thing to remember about this drug is that you need to also adopt a a new diet, so you need to eat well and you need to exercise.
Who knew? That's what led to weight loss.
So, you know, what they did in the trials, the best kind of evidence that we have for its use in weight loss in particular is if you take two groups of people and they both follow a diet and exercise regime with a dietitian and personal trainer, they both follow the same exercise regime, the same diet, but one of them has the medication and one of them doesn't. Over the course of a year, the people who have the medication might lose between 4 and 6 kilos more than the people who don't. And that's on average. So some people will have lost 2 kilos more. Some people will have lost a few more kilos more. But on average, you lose between 4 and 6 kilos if you use it for a whole year. Now, what Skinny Jab have done is take that evidence and they've said, you're going to lose loads more weight than anyone else who doesn't take it. And they're basically marketing it as if you need to do nothing else at all. Mm-hmm. Their marketing strategy is based on you doing it for about 3 months. If you imagine sort of 4 kilos or 6 kilos broken down over 4 months or 3 months, that's a significantly lower proportion of kilos you're going to lose. So at best, you're going to lose a few pounds more than your friend who doesn't take it. And the list of side effects, particularly in the common and very common side effects category, are really, really scary. Things you really don't want to be messing with. Yeah. And ultimately, you've got a choice. You can either do a bit more exercise and eat a bit less and lose the same amount of weight, or you can do things in a healthy lifestyle focused way, a way that works around you and your family and doesn't put you at risk. And, you know, I know what I would choose and I know what I would steer my patients to choose.
Absolutely. I found it really interesting as I came across an article as I was kind of researching for this podcast. And in that, they had a quote from someone who was using this Skinny Jab thing. And they said that all right, the hunger's gone. I've just about managed to eat, though, because I feel nauseous the entire time. My headaches are so severe, I can't really do anything. I just about managed to stick to the exercise regime, which I think Skinny Jab's exercise regime is designed by Kerry Katona, which is a whole other issue. Pop stars becoming personal trainers. Yeah. And he was like, but I'm also now depressed. I owe £2,000 to the bank, and I just don't feel better than I did even weighing a little bit more and before I started taking it. I find it interesting that they say like the whole regime on it is no hunger. Like, we will eliminate hunger. We take hunger out of the equation. Yeah, but then you're going to make people feel sick. You're going to give them headaches. And hunger is part of life to an extent. Like, we have to learn to be able to deal with hunger. I think personally, and I know all my clients who go into a calorie deficit, they complain about hunger, but also they understand it's kind of part of the process as well to an extent.
And we have to learn about appetite. I think this is one of the things that we fall short on in a lot of dietary conversations, is you need to learn to read your appetite. You need to learn to understand when you're hungry, why you might be hungry. Are you physically hungry, or are you just bored or tired, or, you know, feeling a bit emotional in that moment? Understanding why we eat, but also tuning into your appetite. How hungry am I? What do I really need at this moment? What does my body really need at this moment? And when we do things like any kind of appetite suppressant, we're just overriding that thing. It's never a long-term solution, because you need to learn to listen to your appetite and understand what it means and where it's coming from and how hungry you are and what you're hungry for and all these kinds of things that are just so important. If we override appetite, even through things like a very prescriptive meal plan, you're basically saying, like, you can only have, say, for example, 2 tablespoons of pasta. But what if I'm hungrier than that? Or what if I'm not as hungry as that and I don't want to eat all of that? What does that, how much am I supposed to have? How am I supposed to adjust? And one of the things I think is just so important, and it's less so, I guess, important with maybe some of the clients you work with, where it's kind of quite a tight, maybe people want to lose a few pounds or a few kilos. Mm. Some of the clients I work with might be many, many stones overweight, and the journey is very long for them. And to teach them to sort of say, okay, you can only have this much, when before they were having this much, is very difficult. It's very difficult and it's not helpful. They need to learn, everyone needs to learn to tune into their own appetite and think about why. And so appetite suppression as a starting point for anything is just toxic. It's not going to help you at all.
How does the appetite suppressant aspect of this particular drug affect the body? Does it just block the receptor of like ghrelin and leptin and sort of those hunger hormones? Does it just kind of eliminate them so you've got no idea what's going on? How do you know how it does that?
So I think there's two different mechanisms by which it has action, and I will be clear, I'm not an expert in this drug in any way, shape or form. It has two modes of action by my understanding. One is through the hormones that affect your appetite and control your appetite. but the other is through delayed gastric emptying. So it basically stops your stomach from emptying very effectively, or delays how much your stomach empties. And that's where this nausea comes in. That's where lots of those side effects kick in that people suffer from by using this drug. So that's my understanding of how it works, in that kind of twofold right. effect with appetite suppression.
Okay, because messing around with hormones is dangerous within itself, isn't it? Because, I mean, if you're, for instance, if you're diabetic, obviously insulin is the hormone that is affected most there. If you're overweight, chances are that you probably have some other underlying hormonal issues somewhere along the way. Like, I have clients with pituitary gland issues. I have clients with PCOS and sort of the raise in testosterone and the androgens that comes with that and everything else. And the complex web of staying in homeostasis is so difficult a line to tread for someone who doesn't have hormonal issues anyway, let alone someone who does. And then we're saying, look, let's go ahead and let's just put in a load of blockers of all of these things. It's going to take you so far away from where really your body needs to be in the first place. Like, in many ways, it feels like to me, like most of these things, you're blurring the lines. You're giving someone basically a false result.
You're putting them into a false reality.
Yeah.
And so as soon as you stop that medication, or you, in the case of something like a meal replacement, as soon as you start eating normal food again, you're going to bounce back, because you haven't learned about your body. You haven't learned about normal, like, metabolic control. As you say, everyone's hormonal regulation is different. And is this finely tuned balance at all times, or not very finely tuned, unfortunately, for some people, but that is your reality. You have to live with it. So we have to try and understand our own reality, rather than have this purchased, you know, false reality of no appetite, which very often the no appetite is driven by nausea. It's driven by side effects. It's driven by pain when you eat. Now, that's not something, or headaches, whatever it might be, or lethargy, you know, take to your bed. How is any of that a positive way? And I think we, you know, fail to understand sometimes the consequences of this. So within the NHS, these medications would only be used if someone had a very high BMI and risk factors that meant that they were likely to die from their obesity, basically. Mm-hmm. So it would never just be used because someone fancied losing a few pounds. And there is no evidence that someone with a BMI, even between 25 and 30, so just in the overweight, not the obese category, there's no evidence that those people will benefit from it. But they're selling it, and they're selling it to those people, which means it's being sold off license and prescribed by doctors off license, which is a really very unsafe practice and highly unethical. And in my opinion, the whole process of doctors signing prescriptions for people through companies, never having assessed their patients or seen them, is going on. It's going on behind closed doors a lot of the time, but it's rife. It's happening as well with things like IV drips and that sort of thing. Highly unethical. Just because it's not technically illegal doesn't mean you should be doing it. And I think we have a real issue in this country with those sorts of things going on at the moment. And, you know, Instagram has a lot to blame for it.
It does, doesn't it? Have you seen the Netflix documentary, The Pharmacist?
I don't know if I have, but I feel like I've been told about the premise of it.
Yeah, so it's, I can't, for the life of me, I can't remember what the painkiller is that they started prescribing. But basically a company, a massive pharmaceutical company, came out with this extremely effective painkiller that was designed to basically take away chronic pain, you know, like severe back pain, like people living with constant pain. And it worked effectively in that. But obviously the consequences of that is it's highly addictive. And it causes all kinds of other issues. But obviously the pharmaceutical company at the top of the chain didn't really care about that too much. They just wanted, they believed it was a good drug that would make a lot of money, because there's a lot of people in chronic pain in America from car accidents and all kinds of things. And so what started to happen in this little town in America is this pharmacist, he would keep getting these prescriptions from a doctor, and for people who are walking perfectly well. And basically it's all about prescription addiction and prescription drug addiction. And he eventually brings down this company. Sorry, spoiler alert. And and it seems like to me this is an element of the same thing. Like there was physicians opening at like midnight and queues around the block for her to just write scripts to whoever was there, and she would charge fortunes, absolute fortunes, to write these scripts, because she knew these people were addicted, and she knew that she could basically become a pill mill. That's what they described it as.
And also the issue there is that the pharmaceutical company will have been giving her a backhander for prescribing it. I think it's oxycodone, maybe.
That's it. Oxytocin.
Yes,
we got that. Excellent. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And one of my friends has taken it, and he said, God, it is the most powerful stuff ever. But yeah, you can see how dangerous it is.
Yeah, totally. I think that you are right. It's all on the same realm. And this week I've also discovered that there is dentists and doctors doing a multi-level marketing scheme selling multivitamins and this special fish oil.
Yeah. Did you find that out of Dr. Joshua Warwick?
No, I didn't.
He's been posting about that this week.
Me and Josh have got a bit of beef, but I'm glad that...
I'm sorry to bring it up.
not at all. I'm glad to see that he's posting about it, because he's got a huge platform, and that's really, really positive. But multi-level marketing within medicine is regulated under the same rules. You know, since the oxytocin issues, that you're not allowed to take backhanders from pharmaceutical companies anymore. It's completely unethical. It's in the GMCs. It's in the general medical guidance. Same for dentists. But you know, particularly with dentists, you're working completely out of your scope of practice to recommend vitamins. You've not done any kind. It's like me going to my patients, while you're here, did you want a quick tooth extraction? Because I can give it a go. It's exactly the same thing. Yeah, exactly. What, we're giving a little shot? Why not? And with the doctors, you know, you don't need to make that much money. You don't need to make money out of ethical, in that such an unethical way. You're exploiting your patients, trusting you as a medical professional. And that is completely unethical. So we're going to do some work on kind of blowing that whole thing wide open in the next few days.
That sounds great. I mean, interestingly, in terms of Skinny Jab, the manufacturer, they have actually distanced themselves from it. And they said, we don't recommend this is used outside of the scope of practice of the NHS in any way, shape or form. So kudos to them for that, because they could easily turn a blind eye and pretend they don't know it's happening. So I suppose that's great. I find it interesting as well that Kerry Katona is opening their Manchester branch. And this is a drug that's meant to be used for people with a BMI higher than 30. And that's not her at all. So like just the efficacy of the whole operation seems very, very, very questionable. And I know you've started a petition, haven't you? You're part of a petition online to try and get regulation on this matter. Do you want to speak about that?
Yeah, I'd love to. Thank you. So me and my colleague Hannah have developed a petition. What we are trying to do is get some regulation in the nutrition space online. And obviously we're starting with things like Skinny Jabs, IV drips, all of these very dubious marketing claims, which are dangerous to people. You know, ultimately, all of us dietitians, at some point we'll work with people who have been really negatively impacted by the selling of these products on social media, either physically impacted, but certainly medically mentally impacted. And what I mean by that is people are, you know, we see the statistics. There's some really great data on orthorexia, so the kind of healthy eating obsession, which is linked to anorexia, and the use of Instagram. And it's very clear links. All of my patients who come to me with horrible disordered eating problems, they will cite either documentaries, they will cite specific bloggers or influencers who have led them down that path. And there's clear, you know, we can clearly cite it, we can clearly show it, it's very obvious, and yet nothing's being done in terms of regulation. So what we would like to do primarily is get this issue into the House of Commons to be discussed and make sure they're talking about it, and they understand that young people now get the majority of their health information from social media, and there is no regulation of that, very poorly regulated, if at all. What we would also like to do is get a system where healthcare professionals can have a verification tag so that young people can see who they're getting their information from. Is this a person who is verified by a governing board? And I fully appreciate that there are people who fall outside of that in terms of, like yourself, for example. That wouldn't necessarily mean that you had that regulation in place, but you are still a really credible person. But at the same time, I think it's really important that we take the first steps. The flip side of that is I do know that there are obviously doctors, dentists, other healthcare professionals giving really terrible advice, but there that is a regulatory system. Yeah, but what we would then encourage is that there is a system where it's very clear how you report those people. So here are the things that you think they're breaching, click straight through, just like when you report something on the Advertising Standards Authority or anything like that. Very clear reporting system so that concerns can be reported very quickly to governing bodies and people can be investigated. We all, as healthcare professionals, sign up to a code of conduct, performance and ethics. and a lot of what we see online from doctors and, even dietitians is breaching that our code of conduct. And so if there was a way of people recognizing that when they use their professional title in social media, they are also signing up to abide by their regulations, then I think we would have a better state of play. And if we can take those first steps, then we can extend that out into other nutrition professionals who are also well qualified to speak on their subject.
That's fantastic. And obviously I'll link to the petition the show notes so that people can sign it. I signed it last night, actually, as I was kind of getting ready for this interview today. And so it's got my signature on it. And you're very close to your initial target, aren't you? Which is great.
Oh, so the target keeps changing, aren't they? We haven't sort of figured out what stage two is yet, but we're going to keep pushing. We've got 2,500 followers now from some really leading people in the profession. So we're very excited.
No, but it makes a big difference. And I mean, that's very important. In the fitness industry, we get it all the time. It's like, you know, people will ask me, how can I fix, I don't know, something with their joint or, you know, some kind of back problem or pain in their back and stuff. And I'm like, look, I know a really small amount of it, but I'm not an expert. Like, go and see a physio. I can't. It's not what I know. I don't have a degree in it. It's not what I do. So please go and see a physio and get that sorted. And then I find personal trainers are very much in a kind of a real balancing act place, because obviously we kind of know about nutrition. We know about enough in order to get the most out of performance, and we know how to control diet in terms of weight. But really, when you get into the intricacies of kind of like what you know, like what just listening to you talk about gastro issues and all kinds of stuff and things, I'm like, I feel so fraudulent kind of even having a discussion with you about it, because I don't know all of that stuff and things. And it's important. I think something like that would then set a trend through my industry in terms of, look, we have to stay in our lanes. You can't start saying that you know how to fix this, you know how to fix that and everything else. And the more we can all stay in our lanes, the better it will be for absolutely everyone, because you can build a much better trusted network of people. Like, I could have easily done this podcast on my own, kind of talking into the microphone, my views on Skinny Jab, what I've learned about it, what I know about it. But then in truth, I'm not opening up the conversation. I'm not building a network for myself, for my listeners, and I'm not getting a much broader view across the platform. And obviously on Instagram, if you had something like that in place, that's what would start to occur. And we'd have much straighter lanes to work in. And I think it'd be more effective for everyone.
I agree. And one of the things I learned kind of relatively early on is actually, if you build a platform for yourself based on something that you know a lot about, that you're really confident in, people will come to you. There's an audience for everything. And if it's clearer what you do and what you offer, then your followers will come to you. You don't have to try and be a jack of all trades. You really don't. If you say, this is what I'm really good at and this is what I'm really passionate about, people will be like, oh yeah, he's doing a great job of that, or she's doing a brilliant job of that, and that's who I want to listen to. We definitely have this thought process, as I guess as humans, but particularly with social media, that we have to try and appeal to everybody. And my learning from years of getting it wrong is that you absolutely don't. Do the thing that you're passionate about, talk about what you care about, be yourself, and your followers will come to you, and they'll be authentic and they'll stay with you and they'll be loyal. It must be the same with general personal training, but also with the podcast and everything else, you know. And I think, you know, one of the things I've always said is that there is room in the nutrition industry for everybody. And what I mean by that is that, you know, as dietitians, so we have dietitians, we have nutritionists. Dietitians are like the medical nutrition people. If you have a medical problem that you see a doctor for, you need a dietitian. Nutritionists are like the public health nutrition people. So if you're generally healthy and you want to get healthier, then that's great. You can see a nutritionist. Equally, if you are working in public health, or you're working on policy, or you're working for a company, a nutritionist would generally be the person that you would work with. Nutritional therapists are like alternative therapy. So they're very controversial, but there is a space, in my opinion, there's a space for them. I don't want to see your clients who just need to lose a few pounds. I'm not good at that. I don't like giving restrictive diet plans. I don't like giving diet plans at all. I like to talk about here, mental health. And but it's, you know, I don't like kind of that prescriptive way that sometimes you have to be if someone has a very tight margin in terms of weight to lose or whatever it might be. And so for those things, and people do need to do a lot of exercise if they want to go from like a BMI of say 26 to a BMI of 24, like that's going to require a lot of physical exercise and a lot of input. And that's not my area of expertise. Same with nutritional therapists. If you are a super healthy person who also already eats like whatever super healthy people pretend to eat, quinoa every day or whatever it might be this week, then you need a nutritional therapist. You don't need me. I'm going to give you a diet that's going to treat a medical problem. You don't need me to tell you, like, I'm not going to sell you supplements, and I'm not going to do that health optimization thing. That can go to the alternative therapy market, or that can go to nutritionists. But, you know, so I hope I'm building a picture of the fact that I genuinely believe in the nutrition space and in the health space, there is a lane for everybody. There's space for everybody. The problem lies when people come to a personal trainer, but they have a medical problem and the personal trainer is trying to give them a bit of advice. Problem lies when someone has cancer, but they go to a nutritional therapist and they sell them a load of supplements and don't give them proper dietary advice and put them at risk. That's where we need clarification and clearer lines. And I don't necessarily, I guess my point is the lanes are pretty broad, but ultimately if we all were clear about what our roles were and the public were clear about what our roles were, they could make an informed decision about which nutrition professional or which person they need to see and who's going to help them best. I promise you, I'm not the best person to see if you just need to lose a few kilos.
Yeah.
Like, I need to lose a few kilos. I just don't care enough. You know what I mean? Like, it's not,
unless,
I'm not passionate about it. And I want to do things that I care about, and I want to help people who genuinely need my specific help.
Yeah, and I wouldn't know the first thing about prescribing a diet for someone who has cancer. Like, I not only do I not know the first thing about it, I wouldn't even consider the conversation. Like, it the thought of it, it just feels like to me there's so much at risk. There's too much at risk that I do not know enough to have that on my shoulders. And there is no doubt in my mind that I do not need that person's money more than they need their help and their family need them to stay alive and be as healthy as possible. So why would I even consider it? And then I think that circles us back to why the hell we have The Only Way Is Essex. I apologize. I know I'm from Essex, and it's a cross I bear forever. That damn TV show has destroyed this county, and it's destroyed. It's why I don't talk like an Essex boy anymore. It's not. It's because I'm a classical actor, but still. How do these people, what is money? I think it must, it just comes down to greed, doesn't it? It's the only answer I can come up with every single time, because they need to learn that they're a celebrity on TV and there is a responsibility. And the less they deny that, granted, they didn't sign up for that responsibility. Granted, they never turned around and said, oh, you know, I've got all these people following me and that's their choice. And just because you was on a TV show doesn't mean that you necessarily want to have that responsibility. But then also by being on a TV show, you're granted that responsibility and you're granted that power. And it's something, if you really don't want it, then just go away. We will forget about Gemma Collins very quickly, but she keeps...
But they know that. This is the problem.
Yeah.
But they know that. So they have to continue to try and be relevant through whatever means necessary. I think so there is regulation, advertising standards regulation, around if you've got more than 30,000 followers, you're considered to be a celebrity, and therefore you're technically legally allowed to advertise medication. So the Advertising Standards Authority already after Kerry Katona and Gemma Collins for this exact thing that we're talking about today. And similarly, they're investigating Skinny Jab for their, you know, what they're doing generally as a company. So those investigations are underway already, which is great news. That's the first thing to say about these celebrities. The other thing to mention, I don't know if you've seen it, but there was a documentary, a short clip of a documentary made where one of the Only Way Is Essex, I think Lauren from Only Way Is Essex, and a few other ones.
I have no idea. I've never watched an episode in my life. So
they don't. And they were selling, they were brought to a fake interview for a new company that was selling a product that was like it was saying that it had arsenic in it. And the name indicated that as well. And they all sat there and they interviewed for it. And they said, yeah, I'd absolutely promote this product. And when they were asked about, you know, would you recommend it to their friends? They said, oh, no, I never take any of the products that I advertise. They're horrible. I would never recommend them to my friends, but I'm happy to flog them for whatever you tell me. Like, I'm happy to say whatever you want me to say to sell them to my followers. There is no morals in this. And they've said it live on TV. There's loads. I'll send you a link to an article about that. It's very clear that they don't have any ethics or morals around what they're selling people. Now, there's that. I'll tell you another story. I was invited to a restaurant opening, which was very fun in lots of different ways. One of the fun things about it was that it was full of influencers, and I don't know who anyone is because I don't watch Love Island and I don't watch Essex. It's not because I think I'm intellectually superior, it's just because it doesn't appeal to me.
I don't even have a TV license, so I have no idea.
Okay.
Really.
So I didn't know who anyone was, and I obviously wasn't very interested in who anyone was either. But these people live in a distorted reality. So they turn up, they have a friend or a person with them who takes pictures for them. They pose with the other influencers and someone takes pictures for them. And the whole rest of the time, they're just on their phones. They're posting it. Their lives, their reality is in their phone. They don't care how stupid they look lounging around on this furniture or posing in these ridiculous poses or wearing outfits that look all right when they're stood still, but when they walk, you can see their whole bum. They don't care about any of that stuff. What they care about is getting good pictures for Instagram, because that is their reality. That's what they care about more than real life. And it was funny because I was seeing these girls, because they didn't recognize me, presumably they think I'm press or whatever. So they're kind of dancing really near me and trying to get me to take pictures or something. And I was just ignoring them because I didn't know what the game was. I didn't know who they are. And so they have to work so hard to stay relevant. And they will do that through whatever means necessary. They're all aware that every year there's a new cast of Love Island, there's a new cast of Essex, they're ditched like that. So they will do anything they have to do to stay relevant and keep making money. It's their only source of income. Often these people are not particularly smart. They've not got other ways of making money. They've not got qualifications. Their only way of making money is to keep relevant on social media. And they will do that through whatever means necessary. They don't care about their followers. They don't care about the consequences. They're there to make money and make hay while the sun shines. And, you know, there are obviously ways of doing that ethically and responsibly. And there are some examples of people who've come out of reality TV and have made really good livings for themselves in a very sound way, in my opinion. But so many of them just do not give a shit about their audience. And I, especially because their audience is so young and so impressionable, there needs to be some accountability for that. And that's, you know, really where we're trying to go with this petition, is to try and protect young people from the influence of dangerous people who just don't care about their well-being.
Yeah, I mean, it. Listening to that, it strikes me as kind of like when you look at, I used to run theatre schools for children, for primary school children. I had like 12 all over Essex, and like I had to attend quite a few kind of seminars and trainings on kind of child abuse and stuff, because as someone who is face to face with children in that kind of capacity, you have a social responsibility and an ethical responsibility to try and notice the signs if anyone's displaying signs of child abuse and stuff. And the list on that of like what constitutes as mental abuse, especially mental abuse, like physical abuse, is obviously you can't get over social media. I take that back. You probably can to a certain degree. You can certainly get threats. Yeah, and that as well, of course. But it's amazing you going through that story you just told me and everything else. Like, I'm just thinking in my head, well, it is just, it falls under the same parameters of child abuse, of mental abuse on these people. Even though they're not doing it directly to them, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how you directly or indirectly abuse someone, you're still abusing them. And it does need, I'll be honest, I'm a bit taken aback, because I kind of didn't expect the conversation about skinny jab to kind of go into such an interesting topic, and realize that the well is a lot deeper than just someone buying a pen for 400 quid to inject themselves with some kind of hormone appetite suppressant. That it goes a lot deeper into the fabric and the morality of society, and how on earth do we go and protect these people who need it the most, and who are basically the, you know, the future of everything. And what example do we set them when we take to our phones and when we post things and stuff like that? It's a very important thing that we have to consider.
I think we do, and I think we need to, you know, I saw some really interesting content the other day around, you know, even if, so obviously my passion, my interest in this area is around nutrition and health, but also when people are posting about money, about wealth, about their cars, about their women that they've got around them, or their men that they've got around them, what message does that tell people? What are we saying? Basically, what you're saying is you're never good enough. And there's this massive issue with social media that it teaches particularly young people that you're never good enough. You may get that six pack, but next week you're supposed to have a thigh gap as well. You might have that huge booty that you've been working for 6 months, but, or 6 years, but then turns out you have to have a thigh gap, and it's pretty much impossible to build a huge bum without having and have a thigh gap. It's not really possible, but there's pictures everywhere of girls who appear to have it, and so that makes people think that they can. Same with, you know, you might have your six pack abs, but next week there's a new muscle that you're supposed to have on the show that somebody else has. And it's the same with money and wealth and cars and women and whatever else. There's this kind of when the goalposts continually move for us as a human and we get to where we think we should be and someone else goes, oh, but what about this? What about this? You've not done this. What about this? You should be doing this now. We don't cope well with it as humans, you know. I'm not saying that we should have a ceiling on our expectations, but equally we need to know when we've achieved our goals. And it's that kind of destination addiction stuff of like, when do you stop? When is it enough? Where do you, what is your goal? And I think so often we lose sight of actually the goals should be happiness and love and security and all these kinds of things. And actually the goals that people are aiming for are how thin they can be, how brilliant they can look on social media, how much money they can make. And yeah. I think the real key with the thing around the social media where it is abusive to people is where you use Photoshop to edit your images, because you really are then saying to girls, take my supplements, take my, I don't know, whatever it is you're selling that day, and you can look like me. When in reality, that person's either had massive plastic surgery or or has Photoshopped their images to look like themselves. Yeah. They don't even look like themselves, but they're pretending that you can buy what they look like.
It's crazy because it feels like late 90s, early 2000s, it was, you know, it was the Vogue magazine, it was the magazine cover, it was the Airbrush magazine when Photoshop first come into it and everything else. And, you know, I doubt it's Adobe's fault, but they've managed to make it so much more accessible to the masses. And there's a lot of great, like, I do a lot of my work. I don't use Adobe Photoshop for any of my work, but it's nice to be able to edit photos in terms of being able to help me get a positive message across. But obviously anything's open for abuse, isn't it? And it feels like when it was on a magazine, there was a certain element of distance to it. There was a certain element of, well, if you don't buy the magazine, you're not necessarily going to always have to see these images of these women. And you can tell it's a professional photo shoot. But now people are just literally in the street. Like you like see a photo of someone down Oxford Circus. Like, well, I walk down Oxford Circus. Why don't I look like that when I walk down Oxford Circus? Why do I not look so amazing when I'm outside Tiffany & Co. on Bond Street? And suddenly where social media is causing that issue, it must be where they're making it so much more, seem like it's so much more accessible in everyday life. And the truth is it isn't. It's just as hard as having a professional photo shoot paid for by a magazine company. But your brain's not making that jump because you're seeing them in a normal environment. And yeah. It's terrifying. I mean, yesterday on Instagram, interestingly, I said fitness is how you treat others, how you react to stress, how you empower yourself, and how you develop and learn. It's a celebration of all things human. And back to your point about we do lose sight of that so much. And I'm responsible for it as well. Like my Instagram is pretty much every other post I talk about a calorie deficit. And I do think it's important that we remember actually fitness is so much more than losing weight, and diet and nutrition is so much more than losing weight. There's more at stake, and those bigger ethereal things are something you really should tap into more often, because then you do get off this hamster wheel of trying to achieve all the time. And that's really important, taking a step back.
I think it's that choosing health over aesthetics is kind of a big message that I push. And what I mean by that is that you need to also choose your mental health over aesthetics. It's not just your physical health. So when we see women with six packs, for example, the chances are their hormones are so disrupted by having their body fat percentages that low that they're not having a menstrual cycle. They're not having a period because they're too thin to be fertile. Their body is saying there's not enough food around for us to raise or grow a child. Now, that's not the same for everybody. Some women have amazing nutritionists behind them and people working with them to make sure that doesn't happen. But even professional athletes like Paula Radcliffe and people like that have had periods in their training where their periods have stopped because their body fat percentage is too low. A professional runner who came out and spoke recently about her osteoporosis as a result of, you know, long-term malnutrition, having to maintain a really low body weight. And I think the perception that young people have now is that actually everyone has a six pack except for them, because so many people are, you know, using photos and that's all they see. The key to that for me is what I call social media hygiene. Stop following people that you compare your body to. Stop following people that make you feel bad about yourself. Start following women and people who are showing normal bodies, showing their normal body and other people's normal bodies. And what I will say and how I will caveat that is important is that obesity isn't benign. I'm not for this whole huge body positivity, but health every size campaign in the way that it's been kind of hijacked. Yes, make healthy choices regardless of your body shape, but obesity isn't benign. So glorifying very, very overweight people is equally unhealthy in my mind as glorifying very, very underweight people. We need to find a healthy spectrum. but start following people who you think are probably a size 10 or a size 12 or a size 14. That's completely normal and healthy. Then think about like just balancing out your newsfeed with normal bodies, and especially with Instagram. And suddenly you'll realize that that kind of roll of fat that you have at the bottom of your tummy, every woman has that. That's normal. The fact that you carry a bit of extra weight on your arms, completely normal for most women. You don't need to work on that. Just because Victoria Beckham's arms are like twigs, that doesn't mean that that's normal. You know, we just need to normalize healthy bodies, and that will help us to understand that actually getting up at 5 o'clock every morning to go to the gym, meal prepping until midnight, those kinds of habits, those things that you feel like you have to do, those are detrimental to your sleep. People who are sleep deprived eat on average 400 calories a day more anyway. Yep. Like, just do the things, do those basics of looking after yourself, and you'll find that nourishing your body properly and looking after your mental health properly, it becomes a lot easier, and you probably will focus a lot less on thinking, oh my God, I must be much, much thinner. And you might start thinking, oh, what about this lovely exercise that I love doing? And this makes me feel really good. Maybe it doesn't burn all the calories in the whole world, but I feel brilliant during it and after it. Maybe I'm going to eat this diet that has a few more calories than I'm supposed to have, but it's delicious and I've enjoyed it with my friends and I've had a wonderful time and I feel so nourished mentally and physically. That's powerful.
That's exactly what I say to all of my clients. They're like, oh, well, you know, what do I need to eat? How do I stay healthy? I'm like, look, I kind of want to get rid of the conversation of healthy. What I want to do is I want you to think about, is this going to nourish me? Is this item of food going to nourish me? And believe it or not, a donut can nourish you, because at times in your life, you need to eat a donut. Your brain needs you to eat a donut. Your emotional center needs you to eat a donut. So go and have the bloody donut. Yes, it might fall out of your calories, but actually by having that donut then, you're actually probably going to preserve a massive calorie blowout 2 weeks down the road when you feel so deprived and stressed about it all, that then you undo everything. And like, the word nourishment for me as an actor is such a great word when it comes to this, because you can just really get your mouth into it. And it's really like, I just love chewing on the word nourishment. And it's something that I try and peddle to everyone as much as I can. You can have a donut, you can have the pizza, because you need to think about your fitness. And that's what my Instagram thing was the other day. It's like, it's global. Your health and your fitness is global. And your body is global. And it's not just about the scale weight. It's not just about this and that. It's about everything that encompasses everything. It's about how you nurture your relationships. It's about how you, whether you hold the door open for someone or not. And that really, to me, is the driving force behind confidence and fitness, which is basically what I'm about, as I'm sure you can tell. And it sounds like you're about it from the dietitian's point of view. Which is great.
I think one of the things that just brought to my mind was just thinking about like how food is so much more than just nourishment. I think that so often we're quite binary about it, like macros, vitamins, whatever it might be, we're quite binary about it. And actually some of the foods that are most culturally relevant to us, most sentimentally relevant to us, most important for our mental health, whatever else, have nothing to do with nutrition. And food is love, food is like culture, food is creativity, food is so much more than just nutrition. And when we kind of try and call it good, bad, this, that, the other, we're missing the point of it. One of the things I talk to people about quite a lot is the fact that you know, cake is always cake, it's the same nutritionally, but there's a really big difference between eating cake with your friends because you're celebrating and you're having a lovely time, and eating cake on your own at home at night because you're sad. The food is the same. The reason is very different. And if we can unpack the reason and understand that reason, you can still eat cake when you're having a lovely time and it makes you feel good. But let's not eat cake when it actually makes us feel bad. Let's unpack that, talk about it, understand it, and take a different direction. And that, just remembering that the time and when you're eating food is just as relevant as the food that you're eating itself.
Absolutely. I think that's a great note to bring to a close, because I almost just want that to ring in people's ears. I don't want them to think about much else, to be honest. That's a fantastic way of summing it all up, to be honest. So Sophie, tell everyone how they can get in touch with you if they would like to. Obviously follow you on Instagram and everything else. Just tell us the lot.
So my website is citydietitians.co.uk. I am very open to talking to people by email. I'm very active on Instagram, but also on Twitter and Facebook. It's all under Sophie Dietitian. And you can, for the business, you obviously can come and make appointments, come see me. I am available for all kinds of different things. I do two things, obviously the gastrointestinal stuff, which I talked about before, but also this relationship with food stuff, which I'm really passionate about.
Yeah.
So it's kind of two strings to my bow in that sense. And then, come for appointments, give me a shout if you want to write any articles or you've got any stories you want to share. I'm available and I'm always creating content. So if you have things you want to share, give me a shout. I'm very open to chatting.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Sophie, for coming on and setting the record straight on all of these things. And what a great conversation it was and how it developed. So thank you so much from the bottom of my heart to yours. Thank you for coming on. And from my listeners, I'm sure they'll be eternally grateful to hear your voice today. So thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
I really hope you enjoyed that episode of The Fitness Solution. I found it incredibly interesting, incredibly eye-opening, and as I said at the start, it's such an important conversation that I think we need to get into more people's ears, especially young people, and we need to understand the responsibilities that exist with those in the health space and really and truly what it is they're doing. But not even the health space, anyone in the public eye, really. Because let's face it, Gemma Collins and Kerry Katona, you couldn't say are health space advocates. I think they exist in a very different health space to what Sophie and myself exist in. But I understand the responsibility is there upon myself to make sure that I provide the best, highest quality, most well-researched, safest advice I can give to you. And Sophie is very much the same. We've spent years studying. We didn't study because we was on the only way as Essex, basically. So again, I think it's a very important conversation and I think you will feel a lot better for having listened to it, which is wonderful. And if that is the case, then please remember to leave the podcast a review on Apple Podcasts as it really helps. And I read and respond to all of the reviews myself. Don't think I won't see it. Don't think it will fall on deaf ears because I will read it. I will respond to it and it will make me feel all warm and fuzzy inside, which is really the main aim of everything. So that's it from me. I hope you have the most wonderful week. And next week, I've got a very special episode with you where we're going to do a live meditation. So that'll be fun. Have a wonderful week. Peace, love and protein. High fives and positive vibes. Ciao.